Courts have struck down gay marriage bans in a dozen states since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the Defense of Marriage Act last year. Kentucky joined the growing group yesterday when a judge there struck down Kentucky's ban on same-sex marriage. While the ruling has been put on hold, the judge noted that every federal court that has considered a same-sex ban has found it to be unconstitutional. Acceptance of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual Americans is at record high levels. So is the LGBTQ civil rights movement almost complete? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest author this hour says there's more to citizenship than the right to marry, and says that focusing on tolerance or acceptance is a far cry from equality. We will wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Why is tolerance not enough when it comes to gay rights? Let me welcome our guests. Susanna Walters is a professor of sociology and director of women's gender and sexuality studies at Northeastern University. She is author of the book, The Tolerance Trap: How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality. Good morning.
Hi, great to be with you.
Good to have you with us. First, explain what the tolerance trap is. Define the tolerance trap.
Well, it's a sort of counterintuitive claim, I know. I mean, I think most of us want to be thought of as tolerant, and we think tolerance is, you know, we pat ourselves on the back if we think we're becoming a more tolerant society and so on. And certainly, let me be clear, tolerance is a lot better than outright hatred, for sure. I mean, I'll take tolerance over gay bashing any day. But think about the word a little bit. We tolerate things generally that we would rather do without. So we speak of tolerating a long, boring meeting, or tolerating a back that's killing us, or a boring movie. We rarely speak of tolerating that which we really enjoy. We don't speak of tolerating a delicious meal or a gorgeous sunset or wonderful sex. So tolerance is, I think, a very low bar to set when we're thinking about the robust inclusion of a minority group into full citizenship.
No, I understand that, but why do you then also call it a trap?
Well, I think it's a trap because I think it provides the illusion of progress and the illusion that we're already there. So I think, you know, when we use a language of tolerance as the end game, there's, you know, we're now becoming more tolerant of gays and lesbians. Isn't that wonderful? I think what that helps to do is cover up or occlude or make less visible the continuing forms of anti-gay bigotry and discrimination. I think tolerance as the framework traps us in keeping that bar too low. It traps us in looking to a future beyond tolerance, beyond acceptance, towards something more akin to celebration and embrace. So in that sense, you know, because it seems like such a good thing, tolerance is better than intolerance, it sort of makes us believe that we've gotten further than we actually have gotten.
Well, there have been a lot of advancements in terms of gay rights, with yet another state knocking down a same-sex marriage law. What's your reaction to?
Oh, look, you're absolutely right, Joy. There's no question about it. The gains are very real, and we need to acknowledge them. I mean, when I came out over 35 years ago, I could never have believed this world would exist that we live in now. You know, the changes that have happened both in consciousness and in law are very, very real, and we need to applaud them. But I do think that there's a lot of, we need to pay attention as well to the work that still needs to be done. So, for example, you mentioned the gay marriage victories. It's incredible. On the other hand, we still can't in Congress pass a robust ENDA bill, an Employment Non-Discrimination Act, That's been introduced in Congress since the 90s, and we can't pass it. So it's still legal all around the country to fire people on the basis of their sexuality. You know, hate crimes are still on the rise, even in cities at which you'd think they wouldn't be, that have big gay populations. Gay youth are still disproportionately represented in our homeless population. Trans folks still can't get the health care and respect they need and deserve. So I do think that we often look at something like marriage and we see that victory and we see, you know, gay people on television and we see some superstars coming out and we say, we're done. Look at this. It's a huge, it's a totally new world. It's a more complicated picture than that, of course.
Yes, and might these other issues start falling by the wayside as well or become, you know, a public policy as quickly as the same-sex marriage?
Well, that's a very interesting and important question. Of course, we can't know the answer to that. I mean, it is interesting to me that we can get gay marriage, but we can't get employment non-discrimination. I mean, what does that sort of say? It's a curious kind of phenomenon. I hope that will happen. What I do think, and in some ways some of the motivation for this book, is as long as we hinge our movement on tolerance and acceptance rather than something deeper and broader, and as long as we hinge it on gaining one particular right, the right to marriage, and don't look at all of the range of issues and changes of consciousness that need to happen, I'm afraid we won't get further, that we actually do sort of stop the movement forward. Now, I hope you're right. I hope, in fact, that some of what our leaders in the gay and lesbian movement do is to loosen up the reins a bit so that marriage rights aren't seen as the beginning and the end of gay rights. And I think that has to change in our consciousness. I mean, even the way, frankly, everyone introduces me when I'm on the radio is they start talking about marriage, because that is the way in which we've come to think about gay rights in our country. I mean, all you have to do is do a Google search and start, you know, putting gay rights, and you're going to get article after article, soundbite after soundbite, you know, news clip after news clip on marriage. And while marriage is important and it's taken over our public imagination, it is only one particular social institution and one right. And it's come to be seen as you know, the brass ring of gay equality. And I think that's a problem.
Well, we'll talk about some of the other issues that that we should be looking into and not ignoring, because we are talking so much about marriage equality. And we'll welcome your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, speaking from a broadcaster's perspective, a journalist's perspective, one of the reasons why you always get introduced these days is because this is the headline in the news, you
right.
know. And that is, it's sort of like, well, hey, you know, it seems every other day a same-sex marriage ban is being
right.
struck down. And a Public Religion Research Institute survey that was released in February found that acceptance of gays and lesbians in the U.S. was rising rapidly and was over the 50% mark in 2013. That's good news, yes?
Well, I guess I'm just a pessimist, aren't I? Yes, it is good news. It's good news that it's going in a forward motion. I'll give you that. But, you know, it is interesting how we look at that. I saw those polls as well, and there's been a lot made of, we're finally over the 50% mark of people who think that my life is acceptable. And I have to tell you, that doesn't make me really happy. I mean, I think of that other 50%. Mm-hmm. I think, really? Or that other 48%. You actually think that I'm not acceptable? What does that mean? So I guess, you know, there's a glass half full, glass half empty sort of way of looking at this here. I mean, I look at that and I think, you know, yes, it's certainly in the right direction. But what does it mean to actually think that a sizable minority, when asked about acceptability, and we can talk about what that means in a minute and why that's the question, but when asked that question, still find somehow in their hearts to say, these people are not acceptable, are not to be fully included, are not to be embraced and celebrated. So, yes, it's a positive move, but I think I look at that and say, actually, that's not just cause for celebration, that's cause for continued concern.
Yeah, is it religion that factors into that?
Oh, I think it does. I mean, I think it is, you know, illusory for us to think that it isn't religion that is at least part of that. In the same way, when we, you know, look at the recent Supreme Court decision on the Hobby Lobby case, you know, we have to look at that. We can't pretend that it's not religious fundamentalism that is behind some of the most egregious violations of civil rights in our country and abroad. I think it is. So I do think religion has a great deal to do with it. But it also, I guess, disturbs me. I'm glad you brought that poll up. It disturbs me that the question of acceptability is still the question, or you know, rectitude or moral rightness, or is it okay? Why, you know, imagine asking that about other groups. You know, is it okay to, you know, to be a person of color?
Right, right.
Is it, you know, is it okay? Do you think it's okay to be Jewish? So I find this... I guess that's part of the problem I have, is that we're still framing these questions in a way that accepts the otherness of gay life, so that we say, do you accept them? Do you tolerate them? So the you doesn't get challenged, and the them doesn't either.
Yeah. But what do you attribute, though, and I know that gay rights is more than marriage equality, but what do you attribute the very fast shift in opinion in terms of Wisconsin, for example, passed a marriage ban in 2006, I believe, and now, you know, the attitudes are such that that it would not pass today. So that's pretty quick turnaround in opinion. So to me, that means that perhaps the tolerance that you speak of, even though it's kind of a negative term, that has helped to change opinions to some extent.
Well, it's a great question, and I've thought about this quite a bit, because in some ways it's sort of confusing, because there's, you know, there's the victory on that, and then, as I say, not on other things like employment law. You know, I think that it is a positive thing, and there, you know, it does reflect some real consciousness change, but it's not clear to me how much consciousness there is about this other than around marriage. In other words, one of the reasons I think that we have seen such dramatic shifts around marriage, there are a couple reasons. One, there's wonderful legal minds working on this. I applaud the legal community that has put so much energy into the gay marriage movement. I mean, they have done an incredible job of making this go forward. But I think the other part of this that is true is that marriage is an easy one in some ways. Number one, it's such an obvious no-brainer in terms of civil rights. I mean, either people are fully equal or they're not. Either you say, here is a major social institution, and you're either included in it or not. So the patent discriminatory aspect of this, I think, is clear to a lot of people, and there's an appeal to that. But I think there's also an appeal to all of the stuff that surrounds marriage, love and family and citizenship and, you know, apple pie. And so there is a way in which one of the reasons marriage, I think, has been so successful, and, for example, employment law, and employment non-discrimination hasn't, is that marriage is something very familiar and very central to American social institutions and the way Americans understand themselves. So I think it's been an easy one in that way. So it's not clear to me that the victories and the changes in consciousness around marriage will necessarily seep into broader changes in terms of how we understand gays and lesbians and sexuality, for example.
We are talking with the author of The Tolerance Trap, How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you agree with our guest, Susanna Walters, a professor of sociology and the director of Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at Northeastern University? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking with Susanna Walters, the author of The Tolerance Trap, How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality. And we welcome your questions and views on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So do you think that the civil rights movement for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, do you think that that movement is about complete or not, given all the success with marriage equality? Does that mean that this struggle is over? Well, our guest says not at all. There are many other issues that are not seeing the same type of success as marriage equality, and we'll talk some more about those as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's talk a little bit about some of these other areas that you're concerned we aren't moving as quickly in terms of, including the employment law. So right now in this country, it is still legal to discriminate against someone based on their sexual orientation.
Right. I mean, sexual orientation is not included in the protected category. So the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, ENDA, has been introduced in Congress, I think it was the mid-90s. And it just can't pass. And now, in fact, they've, and it might pass now, they've added some religious exemptions to it to make it a very weak bill, and a lot of gay rights groups are now really opposing the new version of ENDA that's out there. But no version has passed. You know, Obama's done some executive orders which have been wonderful in terms of federal workers and federal contracts, but of course that only covers a portion of the workforce. So that's a real issue. That obviously needs to be addressed. And Obama, in fact, has raised it many times, as has previous Democratic administrations, but it can't seem to pass Congress. So that's a real issue. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the things I've mentioned before, of course, about our homeless population and the percentage of, the disproportionate percentage of queer youth that are in those populations, the disproportionate numbers of queer youth that are in populations of that are suicidal or attempting self-harm in some way, you know, the continuous problems of just everyday homophobic bigotry that every gay school kid experiences, even though we have gay straight alliances in colleges and in high schools around the country, and that's been a wonderful move that groups like GLSEN have championed, we still, you know, they're still not, when they do polls of queer youth, you know, there's not, the numbers are astounding of how many kids felt harassed, bullied, discriminated against. So, you know, marriage is an important right, but of course it's just the tip of the iceberg. And what's true is that there's also this more amorphous kind of question about changing consciousness that you referred to when you talked to about the poll earlier, mm-hmm. the 50% poll. You know, that's still got to change. I mean, we still have to get to a place where we're not even asking the question of acceptability. Then we'll know. When no one wants to do a poll asking, you know, do we accept gays and lesbians, that's the moment we'll know things have really changed in some fundamental way. But as long as you have a population that's still seen as, you know, you can accept, not accept, tolerate, not tolerate, you've still got a real problem of consciousness there.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the large percentage of queer youth who were experiencing, you know, bullying and the like. And I guess I want to talk a little bit about the word queer. I often hear about the LGBT community, but you also call it the LGBTQ community.
Right. Well, one of the reasons in that particular instance I would use queer is that I think part of the group that gets the most vilification and the most bullying really are youth that are gender non-normative in some way. Now, they may or they may not be gay, but I do think that is an issue that the movement needs to take on more fully, is that, you know, one of, for example, one of the reasons I think you asked earlier about why marriage has been you know, at the forefront and been so successful. It often, and particularly the plaintiffs who are in the cases, the majority of cases that have been around the country and certainly the Supreme Court, are very gender normative. In other words, they're presenting to the world in ways that are recognizable to straight Americans in that way. I think the groups that get more trouble and get more resistance and get more pushback from most folks are folks that really present a more gender non-normative or a challenge to that binary male-female, masculine-feminine way of looking at gender in our society. Mm-hmm. And so the youth, you know, most studies have shown that the youth who get the most attack in schools are youth that are, you know, not merely or simply gay, but that are also queer in the sense of presenting in ways that are gender non-normative and more challenging to the ways we think about, you know, what makes a boy, what makes a girl.
And one of the arguments in your book is that the arguments both for and against a gay rights focus too much on whether being gay is a choice or biology. Why don't you think that matters?
Well, of course, this has gotten a lot of pushback, as you might imagine, because this has become our national mantra. It's become our national anthem here, Born This Way, from Lady Gaga on down. This has become the way good-thinking people are supposed to think. In other words, if you are a liberal ally of gay rights, you are supposed to believe that gays are born this way. Now, there's a number of things to say about this. For me, the most important thing to say about this is that it is an irrelevant question for civil rights. This should not be the argument we use to make cases for civil rights. People should get their civil rights because they're human beings. End of story. Beginning of a story, end of story. They shouldn't get their rights on the basis of whether you can make a claim that they are born this way or not. It's a weak claim to make for civil rights, and it is always a shifting terrain because science itself is shifting. Now, the other part of the born this way stuff that I find so problematic, so that's the first part, is that, you know, we really just shouldn't make the claim for civil rights based on that. We should make it on basis of law and on equality and on ethics, not on biology. But the second point is that I actually find it a very weak and limited framework for thinking about the complicated and messy thing we call human sexuality. I mean, it might be that we find some genetic or some endocrine system functions that produce certain kinds of desires in certain contexts. It might be that we found that. We certainly haven't found anything definitive yet, but it might be that science finds that. But it might also be that human sexuality is a complex thing. People change their sexual desires and sexual objects over the course of a lifetime. They go back and forth. Some people feel that it's very deeply embedded in them in some hardwired way. Other people feel that they make a choice more. I think it is a danger to say there's a one right way of understanding human sexuality, and that right way is that it's hardwired. You know, one thing that's of course a danger with that is that you end up saying, well, okay, so the people who think it's hardwired, if you make arguments for civil rights on that basis, the people who feel that it's hardwired, they get their civil rights. But if you say, I make this choice, I choose to be a homosexual, are you then therefore not going to get your civil rights protected because you experience your sexuality as a choice? So it's a dangerous and thin ground, I think, for civil rights to say, you know, give me my rights because I can't help myself. Give me my rights because it's a compulsion. I guess I should get my rights because I'm a citizen and a human being.
Let's take a call. We have Laura in Madison with us. Hello, Laura.
Hi. I have been on the board of a statewide LGBTQ rights group, and I just have to agree that the marriage rights fight has overshadowed everything else in the state, and it's been very tough. I myself am transgender, and in Wisconsin, we were the very first state in the country to have protections for lesbians and gays, but and that was, you know, over like 30 years ago, and the gender identity protections have yet to really even be taken up by state government to even be looked at. And it's very frustrating to try and get traction while all of these court fights and stuff are still looming. And there are a lot of issues. There are a lot of other issues besides marriage equality that we face. I mean, in the transgender community, trans people of color, trans men of color especially, have exceedingly high HIV/AIDS rates, and we have exceedingly high violence perpetrated against us. I mean, these are huge issues, and they're really, I think, with some help from the media, notably Orange is the New Black and some other shows that have popped up recently, that's really the only exposure that a lot of transgender issues are getting. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, Laura, thank you for calling. In fact, I think that we've talked to you in the past about trying to get a transgendered protections
in. How many
in.
Years ago was that?
yeah. And it's still not there. I mean, the that's not a part of our employment law protects for sexual orientation, but it's not clear that it protects someone who's transgender.
Right.
Yeah.
Laura, thank you so much for the call. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, part of it is there's only so many ways to cut the pie, and there's only so much money out there for various social movements to put into fighting causes. And if millions and millions and millions, and I mean millions and millions, are poured into the marriage equality movement, there's a limited pot there. In fact, we have seen cutbacks on youth groups around the country that have closed, youth support groups, trans services, all kinds of things. Questions about violence, of course, HIV, AIDS, you know, remains a huge problem, particularly for minority populations. And, it does go off the radar nationally, not just in states that have gotten marriage equality passed, but it gets off the radar nationally when marriage is not only the focus, but is seen as the culmination of the struggle for queer rights. If marriage is seen as the brass ring, then everything else does get pushed to the margins more. There's just no question about it. And I don't think people are deliberately necessarily pushing it to the margins, but as long as we have a national discussion in which gay rights is seen as being synonymous with marriage rights, synonymous with it, collapsed into it, then in fact it is hard to get a national discourse about these other issues.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Laura, for calling. What is, talk a little bit, if you will, about Orange is the New Black and other, how the media is involved in this.
Oh, well, of course, I'm a great fan of the show and binge watch it like everybody else. I think it is, that has been a tremendous help, particularly in making trans identities more visible, and particularly in making queers of color more visible, because it's the visibility that we've had in popular culture has largely been white, it's largely been male, and it's largely been sort of gender normative. So this is Orange is the New Black is just an exciting opportunity to expand those horizons a bit more. But the issue with cultural visibility is a funny one. I mean, I do think, we tend to, look at cultural visibility as a sign in and of itself of huge social transformation. More gays on TV means more acceptance, means more tolerance, means, fundamental changes. It's a partial sign of it, but cultural visibility is not the same thing as transformation in consciousness, nor is it the same thing as substantive legal and civil rights changes. So I do think there can be a mistaking of that. I mean, we saw that actually with the phenomenon of the celebrity coming out recently, particularly the sports figures. So, for example, when Michael Sam came out, the football player, and you know, everyone was talking about this, and it became talked about in the media, in the mainstream media, as this sign of huge, you know, we are living in a new world. It's a post-coming-out world, because even a macho football player can come out and be celebrated and accepted, et cetera. And I look at that, and I think, huh, okay, here we are in the year 2014, and this is still news. And we're still getting first, the first football player, the first basketball player, the first X, Y, or Z, you know? And it seems to me it's actually a sign of how, you know, how far we still have to go, that this is still huge news, something to be talked about, seems to me more troubling than the fact that it happened. And, of course, when then the follow-up to that, when he kissed his boyfriend on television, people went apoplectic. I mean, it started a whole Twitter war going on, you know, that he had, that this was disgusting and awful, and how could he do this, and he pushed it too far. He was too gay. You know, it's one thing to be gay, but to actually express affection for someone is anathema. So to me, that put the lie to the idea that, you know, we're in some post-gay world and coming out is such a no big deal at all. I mean, I was, frankly, shocked at the responses that that kiss engendered.
William on Facebook says, I don't think it's a coincidence that the LGBTQ movement has focused its efforts on breaking into two of our most conservative institutions, marriage and the armed services. It serves to mainstream the movement a bit more than other issues, but these only need to be the first steps. Narrow success can often kill a social justice movement.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't know what else to say. They put it beautifully. I mean, you know, for those of us who have been around the movement a long time, the idea that in the last 10 years or so, that the major victories and the major causes have been entrance into the military and marriage, as these are our victories, these are what we want, has been troubling for a movement that, you know, in its heyday, and in the early post-Stonewall period, was really about, you know, sexual freedom and gender liberation and challenging some of the, the normative institutions of our society. So, you know, I do agree with that person that, you know, that there is a way that these things can undermine the more progressive or challenging potential of all kinds of social movements.
We are talking with the author of The Tolerance Trap, How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality. And we welcome your input. Do you think that tolerance and acceptance is actually sabotaging gay equality? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Susanna Walters, author of The Tolerance Trap, who is telling us that there is more to citizenship than the right to marry, and that by focusing on tolerance or acceptance, that's actually sabotaging the gay equality movement. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for her about her book, The Tolerance Trap. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, we have other callers I want to get to, Susanna, but in your subtitle, How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality, we've talked some about the good intentions and genes. means. How is God sabotaging gay equality?
Well, not personally, yeah. I hope. You know, that really is a reference to what I find as a sort of strange convergence of born this way ideas, that biological determinist, hardwired ideas about sexuality, alongside God made me this way ideas. Oh. So it is a weird world, I think, when scientific determinism and essentialism meets religious determinism and essentialism. And I find both of those equally problematic. I understand how they can make people feel better. It's like, okay, you know, this is just the way you are, or this is just the way God made you, so we don't have to think about anything else. You get your rights that way. I understand how that can be make people feel more comfortable with gay rights. But just because something makes you more comfortable doesn't mean it's the correct way to go about it in terms of really assuring long-term change and long-term inclusion. Again, you know, God made me this way, I'm born this way, are irrelevant questions to the questions of civil rights and full equality.
Yeah, I thought maybe it might be have something also to do with like the Westboro Church, protesting.
Of course. I mean, that goes without saying. But actually, what's true about this book is that it really is written for and to those people with good intentions. Westboro Church does not have good intentions. I'm actually interested in folks who use religious arguments for gay rights cause, for a pro-gay rights position in this God made me this way. Of course, there's the whole other side of religious ideology, the majority, I think, of religious ideology, which really is vociferously and violently anti-gay. But I'm here talking in a more complicated way, I think, about how pro-gay religious advocates and arguments use this kind of God made me this way alongside the born this way, and how those both of those ideas are not adequate or correct for civil rights causes.
Carol in Oak Creek is with us. Hello, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I've been with my partner for 30 years, and I say we still have a ways to go yet. I agree with your guest. Equal rights for gay people, transgender people, etc., should come first. Tolerance can come later, because we gay people will always be in the minority. I don't see what some straight people are so afraid of. It's kind of like what the African Americans went through in the 60s. Their equal rights had to come first, and then so-called tolerance came later.
Susanna?
Yes, I mean, I agree with you, and I think that, you know, the question really is full inclusion, integration, full equality, and not just equality under the law, but more broad-based kind of equality. But I do think that the question of tolerance, you know, should not be part of the picture. I mean, when you think about it, again, you know, tolerance is not what we should be after. I mean, the idea of saying, you know, they should tolerate us always leaves the minority at the determined by how the majority experiences them. So we don't talk, for example, about aren't gay people great that they tolerate all these heterosexuals in their midst? I mean, boy, you know, look at, they turn on the television, we see heterosexuals everywhere. I mean, boy, they flaunt it like crazy. But we're really nice for tolerating them. So tolerance, in other words, is always keeps in place that inequality. It stops real integration, because you talk about them, you know, the people in power tolerating us. And, you know, I didn't come out to be tolerated. I didn't come out to be accepted. I did those things to be fully included and embraced in the society in which I'm a part. So I think that the language of tolerance is, you know, too limited, and it undermines that real radical, deeper embrace of social difference. We shouldn't, you're right, be afraid of difference, but neither should we tolerate difference. We should embrace it.
Mike in Milwaukee is with us. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'm an attorney here in Milwaukee, and I'm about as privileged as you could possibly get. I'm a white male, and I'm heterosexual, and I present as a totally normative person. But I want to agree with your guest in the strongest possible terms that I think that the discussion publicly around being tolerated has undermined the effort that has been, that started out, I think, as a rights movement. And I agree with the previous caller that it is comparative to other civil rights movements around race, civil rights movements around religion, civil rights movements on the part of women, that those, the way that those movements achieved successes is that they fought for political rights, and that there's a sharp difference between rights and some sort of social feeling good about each other. I mean, it'd be great if members of the Westboro Baptist Church saw Harvey Milk as a great American hero. But whether they do or they don't, as long as they respect his right to live his life the way he wants to, that will be a huge success. The respect comes from the ability of the individual to actually do what they want to do without being impeded directly by people or by the community or by the political body. However that might happen, whether that comes through legislation or through success in the courts, that ought to be the focus continuously for any civil rights movement. I just want to thank your guests so much for saying that.
Thank you. Susanna, you want to...
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your comments. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I do think tolerance, you know, it does undermine that. And it's, and in some ways it is really is besides the point of the question of real civil rights and real inclusion and real transformation. I will also say that I think that tolerance often depends on another kind of set of assumptions or set of discourses, which is about sameness. So that, you know, there is often, I mean, this is to get back, Joy, to what you had talked about earlier about why marriage, has been so victorious as opposed to other issues. I think part of what it does is assure heterosexuals that you can tolerate us and include us in this institution because we're just like you. All we want is what you want. Mm. And you know you'll have real civil rights when you're included, not despite your differences, not despite that and to hide that, but you're included with all of the differences. In other words, part of what where we can grow as a society is to really learn from what gays and lesbians and transgender folk and queer people bring to the table, the kinds of ways of loving and living and making families that are different, that can offer all of us new ways of thinking about gender and sexuality and love and intimacy and all of that. But you can't get that if you can't get to those issues if everything's about sameness, tolerance, acceptance.
Well, a caller says, tolerance is just one step on a full spectrum. I believe the spectrum is tolerance, acceptance, inclusion, and finally celebration. Can tolerance lead us eventually to celebration?
Well, I know that argument, and it is one that I am sympathetic to because it has some small amount of truth with it. Look, I hope I'm wrong about this, that tolerance will lead to those other things. I don't think actually that's the way history works, and I don't think that that's the way in which the discourse of tolerance works. I actually think it undermines that potential for those more radical things or more inclusive things. I mean, if you actually look at the history, and the previous caller brought it up, you know, the history of other social movements, they weren't couched in, by and large, in a language of tolerance. Certainly the women's movement wasn't and isn't. It doesn't say tolerate us in the workplace, tolerate us as full and equal citizens. It says this is our right. Biology is not destiny. It is irrelevant to the question of full civil rights and inclusion. And the same thing is true with the civil rights struggle. So I do think struggles that have the major social movements of our recent past here in the United States have not used a language of simple tolerance and acceptance, but as the previous caller mentioned, really use a language of inclusion, of integration, of difference and the celebration of difference. So I do think that tolerance is not up to that job.
So how is the LGBTQ community going to achieve these political rights, these civil rights?
Well, I do think what we need to do now is to really have the LGBTQ movement sort of, and the leaders of the movement loosen the reins a bit around marriage. And we started talking about this earlier. Are we going to shift away from this and move into some of the broader issues? I think we need to do that. I think we need to give up on the language of tolerance. We need to push past that. We need to stop focusing on marriage equality as the only sign of gay rights and as the pinnacle and as the brass ring. And we need to do what I think the movement has done in many points of its history, which is to rejoin with other social movements. I mean, this moment is actually a very critical moment, particularly with the recent Supreme Court decision around Hobby Lobby, which really shows us how we are still in a country that doesn't respect women's rights and women's bodies and women's autonomy. I want to see the LGBTQ movement rise up in response to this. And in support and solidarity with women's rights and with moving towards a more gender equitous future. That, to me, will be the sign of real social change and transformation.
Let me go to Jean in Washington, D.C. Hello, Jean.
Hi, it's actually John. I wanted to first thank the guest for she's so on point in terms of acceptance and tolerance, which kind of have connotations that hold me your nose, versus embrace that we really seek as LGBTQ people. And I wanted to thank her for also framing that in such a way that doesn't denigrate people who, framing her arguments about broadening the movement beyond marriage in such a way that doesn't denigrate people for whom marriage is incredibly important. A lot of the critiques of marriage within the LGBT movement are incredibly negative and demeaning to those of us who fight very hard for marriage equality. So I wanted to thank the guests for not doing that. But I wanted to bring up a point. Because I hear a lot of talk about rights and benefits, which obviously are really important and a part of the conversation. But one of the lessons we can take from the marriage part of the LGBT movement is they've done a lot of research on messaging, and that shows that when they talk about rights and benefits, that language didn't really move people, and it wasn't until they talked about love and commitment, and things that people can, that the average public can better relate to, that we really were able to see the seismic shift in public opinion. So we really need to take responsibility as LGBTQ advocates to redirect the narrative, to broaden it beyond marriage, but also to find ways to reframe issues like employment discrimination, in ways that resonate with people more. So that's a lesson.
John, thank you. We have just a minute for a response, Susanna.
Oh, it's a great question. Thank you. You know, you're right that the messaging is critical there, but I actually think the framing of everything in terms of love and commitment like that has an unintended consequence. And that unintended consequence is that those folks who aren't interested in marriage, who don't want to be a part of that, who live lives that aren't the same as married heterosexual lives, they get pushed further into the shadows. If the discourse becomes one of give gay people their rights because we'll wrap it in the flag and wrap it in love and wrap it in commitment, then those people who live lives of sexual freedom, of non-monogamy, get, in fact, pushed further and further into the non-acceptable, non-tolerated gay population. And that's a real problem.
Thank you very much for being with us. Susanna Walters is author of The Tolerance Trap, How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.